time to put away the bias, the lies, and deceit, and bring forth real talk from real people about real news. Providing the out loud truth and capturing the essence of a new generation, all in a fast-paced hour. This is Viewpoint This Sunday.
Welcome to another Viewpoint This Sunday. This is Malcolm Out Loud, and what a historical time for the country and a historical time for all Americans. Some happy, some not so much, but I'll tell you what, friends, we have got to put this chapter behind us and move on. I think you all agree with that. So they voted to confirm 50-48, and this happened late Saturday afternoon, as you know, and there were a lot of people that were very emotional. Remember, this has been a very emotional moment for the country for a lot of reasons. You either were for it or against it. Interestingly enough, last night the president was at a rally in Topeka, Kansas as well, and he spoke about it as well. So amazing the timing of that, of course, as well. Now, the president signed his commission appointment to the Supreme Court Saturday evening as well. So there's a whole process here, and it happens immediately once he is voted in by the Senate. Then he becomes Justice Brett Kavanaugh, and there's a whole process here. Please welcome to the show Ilana Friedman. Ilana's a strategic counterterrorism intelligence analyst. Ilana trained in Israel. She focuses on the impact of terrorism and its threat to America and the West. Jim McKay is here. He's a political analyst, commentator, and radio producer here at America Out Loud. He has a 30-year background in global technology at telecommunications and pharmaceuticals. Okay, let's talk about Judge, or now Justice. You've got to get used to saying that, guys. Justice Brett Kavanaugh. It's a big deal, obviously. There's only 9 of these folks. He is the 114th in the nation here. Now, this was a big moment for the nation, but it was a very controversial moment. Ilana, how does the country heal from this? Now, let's talk about this specifically now. We've had this great divide. And, you know, one of the things I'm not lost about either is I'm always proudful when we have these moments as Americans. And I'm never lost on the moment that when we come together as America, we are invincible in this nation. We can do about anything. When there's a great divide like we've seen here in recent months, it really begins to show the cracks in the armor, if you will. How do we heal those cracks?
After these weeks of such nasty, mean-spirited attacks on the judge and his family, I was very encouraged to hear the Democrat, Senator Jeanne Shaheen from New Hampshire, talk about how the divisiveness in America is hurting the country and that we need to return to civility in our discourse. So to hear a Democrat say that, I found encouraging, because the real anger and nastiness has been coming from the Democrat side. So, and it's been a frontal attack on a good man and his family and on the whole process of advice and consent. We need more people like Jeanne Shaheen to not just say the words, but actually move toward the other side of the aisle and make amends somehow. And it's got to be through civil discourse.
You didn't see a lot of that over the past many weeks, clearly. We've not seen, many people are seeing this as the biggest divide. I mean, probably a lot of the young people have never seen one quite like this, because it was significant that you've seen the frustration level and the protest have gotten so ugly. It's become, I guess I hate to say, but it really is mob rule. It seems to be mob rule and the aggressiveness of them and how they've taken that on. One of the most interesting things, before I go to Jim, Ilana, I want to ask you something else here. One of the most remarkable moments of the Senate through this whole deal that seems to have just transcended the whole program and was Senator Susan Collins. She stopped everybody in their tracks. I mean, she stopped liberals and conservatives, the left and the right, Democrats and Republicans alike. She stopped them all in their tracks. Her speech was just shy of an hour. It was truly an eye-opener. And what did it mean to you as a woman and somebody who's gone through it?
An obstacle to some of the programs that Republicans have wanted to push forward. But I thought her statement was very thoughtful, well articulated, and she didn't spend much time talking about the fallacious accusations that have been the focus of nearly all the discussion over the past few weeks. Instead, she focused on Judge Kavanaugh's long history of judicial opinions, 306 of them, I believe, and she went into detail, as though she were an attorney, which she is not. She had a very strong grasp of the details. In contrast to her earlier unwillingness to support Judge Kavanaugh, she announced that she would vote for his confirmation, and I think that was outstanding because she had been withholding her vote.
Right, that she has, yeah. I think, Jim, I think a lot of them, including her and Manchin and Murkowski and all of them, I think a lot of the last vital deciding votes were very hesitant to tell the public and tell the media who they were voting for because they knew they would be, again, mob rule. I think that's why they held it back.
Not dramatic at all. She was just on point, very organized, and laid out the entire argument for why Kavanaugh should be approved in her speech yesterday afternoon. If you had any doubt, and if you were on the edge or on the fence, listening to her would have settled it. The whole atmosphere of this chaos in the halls of the Senate office building with kind of just mob. I mean, these people, I was scared for some of their safety, and they're being shuttled in and out by, I guess it's Capitol Police. That do that. It's just so far from what we would expect of the dignity in the halls of Congress.
Well, yeah, Jim, which brings me to the point of this. You know, when you look at the frenzy, I mean, the words I use to describe it are a lot of people seem like they have a crazed look in their eyes, and they're like, there's something about it. They've become rabid over this. It's been a rabid impact of people and their emotions. It's run and hide the emotional impact on all of this. And here's the thing I want to say to both of you here is that I think that, you know, again, this is to me the shame of the Senate. I'll call it the shame of the Senate. And I'm talking about across the spectrum here. But I think the way they held themselves and the way they brought America through this, you got to remember, these are the people who the public is, they're emulating the senators. And, you know, when you hear the senators get on camera and get on microphone and they start talking in the way that they talk about, I mean, they basically had the justice as a serial rapist and as a crazy loon here, basically. It was so far out of the stretch. Obviously, they didn't like his politics. I get that. But I think a lot of people were really... But, you know, Ilana, all of that comes from the senators. They set the example.
People like Maxine Waters, the congressman, who is urging her people to go out and harass Republicans wherever they are. Here's what concerns me, though. The people who've been on the streets demonstrating against Judge Kavanaugh are not likely to go home quietly. They've already shown they're angry, they want to fight, they've gone beyond civil discussion, and they've resorted to physical harassment and sometimes violence against the people with whom they disagree. So they're disappointed now even more so, frustrated and angry, and I'm concerned that they're going to take their anger onto the streets, attacking people they know are conservatives or who wear MAGA hats or have bumper stickers on their car.
Exactly.
And we're not dealing with individuals who have themselves...
That's it.
We're not only dealing with people who have been themselves victims of sexual assault. It's about organizations like Antifa, Center for Popular Democracy, and Demand Justice, among others, who are all receiving funding from people like George Soros and his foundation. So we're dealing with something that's bigger than just, you know, groups of people on the street. We're talking about well-funded finance and well-financed operations.
You know, what I'd like to see now is I'd like to see the senators come together, both the Republicans and the Democrats in the Senate, and I think maybe they need to have a conversation with the public, with America, because I think on your basis, Ilana, and what we're talking about, Jim, I think the problem is that, you know, why wait till somebody's hurt? In other words, the violence and the tempers and the tantrums and the mob rule are running hard and fast. I mean, they're screaming at the top of their lungs. I think the next level is going to be physical. And I think that's potentially a real problem. I mean, do we wait for somebody to get hurt or killed?
Out of rage, and someone's going to get hurt.
That's
the bottom line. And then everybody will say, I'm sorry. But right after the vote was completed and people exited the Senate chambers, the media was interviewing senators from the Democratic side, and they're all saying that, well, we've just begun to fight. The fight now is at the ballot box. And it had this very level of arrogance to it. The entire resist movement is still there. They're not backing down. They're not looking for cooperation. There's going to be no kumbaya, you know, moments here. Everybody's, you know, batting down the hatches. Here we go to the election right. In 32 days, I think it is. Oh.
Well, Jim, we could have a record turnout, you know, for the midterm. I mean, the people are really juiced right now on both sides of the aisle, by the way.
A lot can happen in 30 days. But, you know, one of the things that surprised me today was how many Democrat senators got away from all the allegations and started they had to criticize Judge Kavanaugh because that was their job. But they criticized his opinions on such things as Roe v. Wade and workers' rights and Obamacare and campaign finance. Right. And they got back to the issues of judicial responsibility, and that's what the hearings should have been about from the beginning. But I was encouraged by the fact that they were willing to get off this other kick and start talking about the real issues. Charles Schumer got up and started talking about what a liar Kavanaugh was, and as leader of the Democrats in the Senate, I thought that was horrendous.
Play. I mean, he made it very clear he was not going to play well. He was not going to participate in this process on any calm level. And he got everybody juiced up from the beat. This is what I'm talking about. I think a lot of people, both on the Senate and Congress side, they made it too personal. It became too personal. I think that's where the politicians are going to have a hard time with the divide.
But one thing, Casey from Pennsylvania, talked about Judge Kavanaugh's opinions, Justice Kavanaugh's opinions. His findings as he sat on the court, and what he did as a judge, not what he did as a teenager, and I thought that was encouraging.
Yeah, no, it is indeed. How do we deal with people who are putting false accusations out there? If they're proven to be false, should they be brought up on charges? Should they be perjury charges of some sort, or what?
Is accusing a man or a woman of some violent crime, rape or sexual harassment even, and you have no evidence of it, what do you do? Do you, the accusations get out there, they want their retribution, they want their day in court, but they have no evidence to prove it. I think in this case with Christine Ford, something's happened to her, and everybody I think on the Republican side admits that something happened in her life, but not Kavanaugh. So does he have an opportunity to go back and sue her for defamation of character? Certainly, but I think he's above that. What is it going to gain? I mean, what's it going to gain him? He's not going to.
Yeah, he's not
going
to do that.
Definitely won't get any good publicity from it. And it's almost a lose-lose situation for everybody involved in those type of situations.
I don't see the justice being able to do that at all, because that would be so much damage on top of him to go after one of these women. But really, Ilana, you as a woman, can you answer that same thing? Like a lot of these, like Christine Blasey Ford and many of the other women here, there was three of them that we know of, with the charges that they put forth, should they be held up on, I mean, should they be charged if they were lying?
I think it's pretty, even Christine Ford, because it seems as though she's not really afraid to fly, and she didn't have a problem with doors in her home and all this other stuff. And this is coming out. But the more important thing is who's going to sue her. You know, he's not going to do it. Who else would? So I think, very strongly about. I would guess that 90% of the women in this country have faced some sort of sexual harassment or assault in their lifetime. And that would make all of us victims, okay? But I'm not really talking about rape and violent assault, but I'm talking about the kind of harassment that women get all the time.
Right.
Still get, either through coercion or through just physical force or just humiliation. And these things are things that women have to adjust to, and most of us have done that. You just move on. And I think it's an issue which is very serious in our country. It's an issue which is serious all over the world. And I don't know how we overcome it, but I think at some point we have to understand that that this is something that's probably not going to go away anytime soon, in spite of all of what's going on.
Well, it's not, but again, we're damned if we do, damned if we don't. If we go after the women, you know, that's not going to go over too well in the public purview, and it's going to be a real problem with the whole Me Too movement. It's not going to work. But at the same time, if you let them go, what does that do for the next time?
I think in this case, the ones you have to go after is who leaked the confidential documents? Then who put these lawyers that were came out of nowhere, so to speak, that were funded, as Alana said, by Soros and other what they call dark money to enhance the story? I mean, this woman, if you look at her and say she had a kind of a breakdown over this whole thing, and all of a sudden, 6 days, somebody puts together this what I call a fabricated story of events that have no, there's no evidence, no people. She just had names of people that she knew, and nobody could remember it happening at all.
Right.
But the people that are there on the legal team, the office team, whether it was in Feinstein's office or in, I think it was Eshoo's office in California, the member of the House of Representatives, these people need to be held accountable.
Jim, I want to get to a couple other top stories while we have a few moments here, and I want to talk to you because you've been following this pretty much. I mean, this was kind of a big deal this past week, but there is other news out there, including the fact that the interest rates was increased by the Feds. We've talked about this for a while, that it was going to happen. The Federal Reserve System, they increased the rate to from 2 to 2.25%. Talk to us about that. What kind of an impact do you think this is going to have on the economy?
The thing is, why do they do this? The big sector that's going to be affected is housing, because we've seen mortgage interest rates go from about 3.5% last year up to now for a 30-year loan up to 4.75 as of Friday. Now, that's a lot of money out of your pocket if you're buying a $300,000 home every month. The increase is significant. And the housing market was already beginning to slow down. So that sector of the economy is very sensitive. Housing is a major part of our economy. Probably have one or two more rate increases in the next 6 months, and their target is about 3.5%. They feel that is a normal rate for transactions.
Wow.
It used to be that the interest rate controlled the money supply, and this was fiscal policy and how much money was floating around in the economy. But since we have such huge deficit spending anyway, it really has very little play.
Ilana, I want to talk to you about this other big story about China, the microchips. You've been following this, I'm sure. This is another, I think, a very significant story, and it kind of explains a lot, actually. But they've been installing these microchips in servers, data centers, motherboards. This has been reported now. Apple, Amazon, our Defense Department, Ilana. I mean, come on. And Bloomberg came out with this story and said we're being attacked. I mean, Chinese spies are all over the place here.
These new chips, they work very well, and they are programmed to report what is going on in whatever device they're in, and the people who are using it. So we're talking about a pretty dangerous situation where we buy equipment and that has parts made in China, particularly electronics, and it becomes a spying device.
Most people don't even realize your television sets, these what they call intelligent TVs, have this capability built into them.
Can you imagine?
So they can listen to you while you're watching whatever program you're watching, Dancing with the Stars. They can be listening in on your conversations, and there's no way to disable it. That's the problem.
Well, that's fine. But based on this story here, I think it's going to take some major regulation with what's coming in from China. I mean, here we get companies like Apple are getting all their parts made over in China. I mean, we're going to have, how else are you going to do this, especially if it's even impacting the Defense Department, let alone your television? I mean, we're talking about the Defense Department, let alone the rest of it. But we've got a lot of things we're dealing with China right now. I mean, this relationship is tenuous at best, and we'll see what continues to happen here. But, well, anyways, friends, as we continue on here, a tremendous thank you to Ilana Friedman and Jim McKay. Now, listen, as we do this next, up next here, I want to talk to you a bit more about this. We talk about the dysfunctionality of the Senate and really the psychology behind what we call now the resist movement. More Viewpoint in just a moment.
The America Out Loud Talk Radio app is on Android or Apple. It's the perfect way to listen in to the new generation of talk shows and hosts who are ready to inform and inspire.
Think back to the last time you felt healthy and energized. The best times of our lives occur when we're at the peak of our health, sleeping better, full of energy and focus. We know that fades with age, and you might be feeling the effects of aging as low energy and poor sleep. But it doesn't have to be that way. There haven't been any nutrition systems designed to rejuvenate our bodies as we get older, until now. Healthy Cell Pro is the only multi-nutrient system that impacts the building block of your body, the cell. Created by anti-aging expert and Nobel Prize nominee, Dr. Vincent Giampapa, award-winning Healthy Cell Pro cuts through the complexity of nutrition supplements by simply giving you the purest ingredients, filling dietary gaps to nourish your cells and enhance your quality of life for optimal performance. Visit HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for an exclusive discount or call 844-869-9958.
You know, you look at the past few weeks and you see the frequency and the intensity of the outpour, the demonstrations, that has totally gotten out of hand. I mean, chasing senators in the halls of the Capitol and their offices and in elevators, at restaurants, and I mean, at homes, and it's really gotten unruly. I mean, it's no longer just a protest. It's become very, very uncivilized. But there's a whole process of, you know, who do you really blame for that? And I've thought about that a lot in the last few days, people. I have given that a lot of thought. How did we get here? And who do we really blame for this? And I have to tell you, I have a theory myself on who I blame. But let's get the thoughts of Dr. James Mitchell, who is here, and jump right into this here. Now, Dr. Mitchell was involved in the development of the CIA's Enhanced Interrogation Program. You've read his book, I'm sure, Enhanced Interrogation. He has a PhD in clinical psychology, which we'll certainly tap into today. And he served 22 years in the U.S. Air Force and retired as a lieutenant colonel. And you look at this whole process. Now, let me start here. Jim, we talk about the Senate process. I think a lot of people would say the dysfunctionality of the Senate confirmation process was on full display, I mean, for all Americans to see this particular time. I mean, you have the hysteria. You have the media reporting, of course, that plays into it. You have the protesters, really, which has turned to mob rule by force. I mean, it's chaotic as hell. And remember, all of this is kind of a trickle-down effect from the actions of these senators. And nobody's really talking about that in a way. But I think you have to bring it back to the core, Jim, and you really have to look at these senators and specifically who set the example. And you've been through this yourself. Tell us, what responsibility do these senators have, and what's the lasting damage of this thing?
Well, I think one of the things we need to do is sort of step back and look what they view as the threat of Kavanaugh being on the court. Because if you understand what they're trying to prevent from happening, you get a better feel for how desperate they are to stop it. You know, he would be the fifth conservative on the court. And if you look back through history, you'll see, especially modern history, last 30 or 40 years, you'll see that most of the advances that the leftists have made in the United States is not by passing new laws through Congress, it's by winning new court cases. And so their major concern is that by having an originalist, a constitutionalist, on the Supreme Court, they're going to lose ground when it comes to both advancing their sort of socialist progressive agenda and having in place those things that they've already got across. So they're very, very concerned about that. And their end goal is to do whatever it takes to prevent that from happening. And so you have to expect that they're going to continue to do whatever they can do to try to manipulate the sitting members of the Supreme Court. So if you step back from that and you kind of keep an eye on what their end goal is, you can see how how desperate they are to prevent that from happening, and when they couldn't attack the facts, because, you know, there's a basic process that is used to discredit ideas and people, and that is you first start by attacking the facts, and they tried to do that during the conventional hearing, and they didn't do a very good job of that. And then what they do is they kind of stir up their base so that they can get, by encouraging personal attacks from behind the scenes. And what they do is they get people who are like-minded to themselves to take independent action. And you're seeing a lot of that happening now. And then once they're convinced that the facts can't be reframed to support their position that he shouldn't be on the court, then they move directly into open and direct character assassination, which is what they did. And using the same process they used to attack me and Bruce when Feinstein's one-sided, inaccurate report came out from the majority when they were the majority and released that enhanced interrogation report, they start with hacks and innuendos, right? And then they move to outright, even unfounded allegations. And at this point, when they get to the unfounded allegations, what they say is the allegation enough is a reason to prevent Kavanaugh from being on court. The mere fact that apparently these folks are accusing him of this is an indication that he's unfit. And when in fact, they're the people behind the accusations, they're the people who planted the idea in the minds of their supporters that more people needed to come out of the woodwork and make these unfounded allegations. And then they start leaking lies, and they attribute it to another source, and they repeat it as often as they can, and they treat it like it was true. And in the end, what they do is they threaten a course of action that assumes mutual destruction for all the parties. Now, we haven't even got there yet, but they were clearly willing to savage Kavanaugh and completely destroy his family and his career and his position in the community to advance their liberal agenda. I think that's, you know, that's all they can do.
Yeah, well, that is exactly it. They did not blink an eye. I mean, what you say right there just now, to me, in my worldview, there did not seem to be any hesitation whatsoever to do whatever they had to do to tear him up and down and destroy him. I mean, completely obliterate him. Now, interesting what you say here, and I want people to understand a couple of things. See, Dr. Mitchell's gone through this, friends. He went through this whole process. So, you know, I hear a lot of people say, Jim, now that, oh, well, you know, the Senate really, they're really, you know, this is a new discovery. What just happened with this process? Like, wow, like I've never seen this before. But I just want to reflect back a minute. What year was that? What process of a couple of years did that happen with you? When was that?
Well, it actually started when Senator Levin was doing the Armed Forces Senate Committee hearing into what happened at Abu Ghraib. Bruce and I had absolutely nothing to do with that. And yet his staffers, or the staffers on the Democrat side, started telling people all kinds of lurid and completely untrue things. The press, who are the willing cohorts of these progressives, that were completely untrue. Shifting the blame from those people in the military and those people in JPRA who were actually, which is a branch of the DOD, who were actually responsible for what happened to me and Bruce somehow. And then it progressed from there so that in 2015, when Feinstein released her report, now she claims she didn't do it, but I've been told by friends of mine who are journalists that her staffers leaked our name on deep background to the press, particularly to members of the press that they thought would be sympathetic to the view that they were trying to get across, and told them all kinds of scandalous things. So they attributed to me, both me and Bruce, all of the rumors, all of the allegations, all of the things that we were not even involved in, and attacked our character. And we went through probably a year and a half, 2 years of ugly articles coming out over and over and over. And it continued up until I started pushing back. And occasionally we still see those kinds of articles, especially out of the the folks who are primarily interested in advancing that agenda. So I wasn't the first person. Right. I mean, they've done it, and I'm not saying they did it
as blatantly as this.
Yeah, this is actually they try to at least put off the blame for this on other people, on the press, and on mainly on us. Mm-hmm. But this is just character assassination. Mm-hmm. It's a covert influence campaign, mm-hmm. open warfare against the constitutional republic that we have in place.
So initially, like in this particular case, the Senate tries to go after with normal practices of policy. And then, you know, the judge has such a remarkable record of policy, you can't defeat him in policy. Now, sort of like they did, I guess, with you back then. But after that fails, and it doesn't work. And you got to remember in this case now what happened is the entire confirmation process had concluded. Now, this was done. So, in other words, we're now in the ninth inning, friends. We're not, you know, we're in the ninth inning. That's what's happening. And that process is kind of ended, Jim, at that point. And so now what the only thing you can do, you have to admit, is you need a Hail Mary. You need something you can throw down the field quickly to be able to score. And that's when they roll out Christine Blasey Ford. Is that correct?
Yes, that's when they decided, okay, we can't reframe his rulings such that he's attacking the liberal positions because he's been relatively balanced. And in fact, he ruled in a couple of cases against the Bush administration where I wish personally that he had ruled in a different direction. Here's the thing that I would say. I would say that my understanding of the Supreme Court is that they are supposed to rule whether or not the law that was passed is consistent with our Constitution. And the legislative branch then has the capability to go back and change it so that it is consistent with our Constitution.
That's right.
Or they strike it down and send it back, and they do that sort of stuff. And that's their role. Their role is not to make new law or to legislate from the bench.
But don't you think people get confused with that? What you're saying right now, I mean, think about this. Don't you think a lot of people think differently about that?
They do think differently about that, and I think that's part of the problem.
It's a big problem.
Our poor effort of teaching civics over the last 30 or 40 years. Like I said earlier on, the progressives have been using the court to legislate from the bench the kinds of leftist things they would like to see done. And so when they see a threat to that, that's when the bullying comes out. That's when the threatening comes out. You know, when it looks like they're in their last gasp before they lose the advantage on the Supreme Court, they're going to start doing everything they can do. And I suspect it's probably not over yet.
No, they're going to continue. There's even talk about impeachment, and there's talk about other things. I mean, it's all the way through. I mean, because what's happening is they're crazed. They're crazed and they're rabid about it. I mean, you can see it in their eyes. You can see, I mean, they think this is really the end of the world, that this is that much of a crisis to them, that somehow this judge is going to go in there and he's going to legislate the entire process of the, and this is what they've been fed. Which brings me back to, listen, you know, I started saying to you that, you know, when you look at where this is all coming from, now I've thought a lot about where is this all coming from? Why is there this crazed attitude out there that we haven't really seen before to this level? And this is about as extreme as we've ever seen. But don't you think that this is, I mean, it's got to be, in my opinion, I think, that this is a direct responsibility of the senators. You know, the senators, they're the ones that predicate this thing, and they lay it out there in such a way. You listen back to a lot of the testimony, you listen to their speeches on the in the confirmation process, and don't you think that that plays a big part of it? All that filters, I mean, talk about the psychology of that for a minute for me. Don't you think that all filters into people's minds and it feeds into the populace, and then it gets this rabid, crazed attitude out there that, oh, the senators are this mad and they believe this guy is a real rapist. It must be true.
Right. That was sort of the second step that I was talking about earlier when I was running through that quick list, which is the things they say on the Senate floor, the things they say to the press, the allegations that they make and their expressions of concern stir up their base so that their base begins to act independently. And when you have an outsider like Soros who's funding these kinds of mob attacks, then it gets even worse because, you know, his goal, it seems to be, to change the basic structure of our government. So it is the case that a lot of these things that we see people doing that we think are just crazy when we see them doing it have their origin fingerprints from the senators, especially
they were fueled by the senators. They were fueled,
especially Dianne Feinstein and her crew. It's just
all of them. I mean, Kamala Harris, Cory Booker, I mean, Hirono, all of them. I mean, they're all got this crazed look in their eyes, like the world is ending.
If you look at some of the old videos of lynch mobs, what you'll see is there are one or two agitators in the front that's stirring up the mob. And in this particular case, the lynch mob that was sent after Kavanaugh, the agitators were the Democratic senators in Congress and the liberal media. Mm-hmm. They created this lynch mob. They stirred up all of the crazies, and they just set them on them. To make all the threats and the mob people and the block things, and they argue that the media argues that that's the exercise of freedom of speech, but in fact what they're trying to do is they're trying to curtail other people's freedom of speech through these mob actions. One point that I would make about this is that, you know, earlier on, I described the process in which they do the character assassination. And what the liberals are trying to do is distract you from the fact that that process is taking place by the lurid content of the allegations. So if you're talking about gang rapes and throwing ice cubes and drunken parties, which you somehow managed to get through and become an honor graduate and do well enough scholastically to get into Yale, then you're not paying attention to the fact that they are moving the goalposts, that they are shifting from attacking the facts to attacking the person. You know, the clear indication that they're losing is that they started attacking the person.
How does America pick up the pieces, Dr. Mitchell? Where does it go from here?
Well, it depends on how we frame it. You know, I don't, as a psychologist who's dealt a lot with special operations folks and other people who deal with very traumatic, potentially traumatic events, is the way that we frame it influences how we respond to it. Our constitutional writers set up our government so that it would be adversarial. That was the way that we didn't get locked into some sort of monarchy or some sort of a dictatorship. They actually set it up so that it would be difficult to pass laws. It would be difficult to have one small group put their agenda across. And so one way of thinking about this is that this is what happens in an open representative democracy. And eventually, they'll end up showing their true colors, those people who are opposed to the democracy, and then we have an opportunity to vote them out of office. So rather than saying this is going to be a horrible thing, I think if we look at it from the point of view of what our founders thought, this is probably a good thing, because that gives American citizens the opportunity to correct the course of our government.
Hmm.
But if you view it as an opportunity to go, oh, that's the direction this our government is heading, oh, no, we need to correct that, and then you get off your keister and go out and vote in the proper direction, then you have a chance to correct the government.
Wow.
You'll have to wait a while to get rid of people like Murkowski, because she's in there for quite some time.
Right.
But there are a number of Democrats who are essentially socialist, leftist, communists, who are up for re-election, and my suggestion is get out there and vote them out of office, because that's the only course of action you have to prevent this from happening to your child, your son, your daughter. It's the only course of action you have.
Yeah, so well said. You know, she's in there, Murkowski, till, by the way, folks, till 2022. And you might have seen the tweet from Sarah Palin saying that she can see 2022 from her house. And, of course, the media jumped on that as speculation that she may be running for Senate in 2022. Very interesting here. Tremendous thank you to Dr. James Mitchell here. And you hear what he says here. I like the way he ended that, people, with the idea of optimism. He said, one of the beautiful things I love about this country, our nation, and I truly can never lose sight of this, is no matter what we think is the darkest day, we always are an optimistic bunch. Really and truly we are. And even if we can take those moments and turn them into a learning moment, well, what we call a teachable moment, which we talked about on the platform before, I think that to me leaves us back to that shining city on a hill. I like that. I like that. Even though we tend to go wrong, but you know, you got to remember, people, we have a lot of personalities in the nation. And yeah, you have over 300 million people. You can't satisfy them all, can you now? But at the end of the day, America has to not just survive, but thrive. And that's a beautiful thing to say. Well, listen, on our special edition here of the Supreme Court and Justice Brett Kavanaugh now, let's go ahead and we'll move it along here to a panel discussion on the good, the bad, and the ugly in American politics. More Viewpoint in just a moment.
We are the vision of the voices. You can email us at talk@americaoutloud.com.
The goal is to deliver a message of truth, inspiration, and hope to the world, to unite people from all backgrounds and beliefs in an effort to advance humanity. News blogs, informative podcasts, and entertaining videos. It's AmericaOutloud.com, where the conversation never ends. With 24/7 streaming on our free apps on both Android and Apple. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
Again, he's the 114th Supreme Court Justice in our nation's history. That's it. And so he's a very elite club. He's one of nine now. This was big because it's biggest one of your life at this point, because it was, again, a pivotal vote. You didn't hear as much fanfare with Gorsuch, but there was a reason again. We're speaking about the pivotal vote here. So let's get to the good, the bad, the ugly, and hopefully we'll leave on a positive note here. But let's welcome onto the show here, please, Dr. Ron Martinelli is here. He's a retired police detective with a background in investigations, forensics, psychological profiling, and human factors. He's a national voice and often referred to as the expert's expert. His show, A Thread of Evidence, is a must listen to right here on America Out Loud, friends. And by the way, he's got a column up you must read on the platform today, and it's really good. It's got the sheepdog out there, and you'll see the image of it. It's very, very unique, but not for Judge Kavanaugh, go we. It's very, very solid piece. You've got to read that on the planet. It's a lot of stuff. A lot of. If you want some insights into Kavanaugh and what America is thinking, go to AmericaOutloud.com and you'll find a whole lot there. Also, joining our discussion, please welcome Ava Armstrong is here. Ava is a political commentator. She's a radio personality and producer here at America Out Loud. She's an author. She's a great author with 15 books. Please check her out on Amazon. And she writes about all the patriotism that you offer those patriots out there and our military and law enforcement. And check out her books, please, as well there. So, all right, so listen, Mitch McConnell was obviously celebrating last night. I would have loved to have been a fly on the wall in some of those drunken parties. I shouldn't say that, I know, guys, but after the talk about beer and Brett Kavanaugh, huh, Ava?
This is a champagne moment, I think.
Probably not cheap Budweiser, right? Probably not a Budweiser moment. Yeah. Not that we have nothing against that, but probably a champagne moment. So Mitch McConnell, he comes out, listen to this now, and he says, he calls Kavanaugh's opposition a great political gift. Now listen to this, Ron, Ava, you ain't going to believe this. These were his words yesterday. I mean, you can't believe, talk about not backing down. So he says, with everything that's happened, as chaotic and insane as it's been, he says, the mob rule and everything that's taken place, it's a great political gift for the GOP. He did an interview with the Washington Post, and he called the opposition the great political gift. He said that he never considered asking Kavanaugh to withdraw or asking the president to withdraw the nomination. He said, I want to thank the mob, because they've done the one thing we were having trouble with doing. They energized our base. Unbelievable. What do you think of that, Dr. Ron Martinelli? What do you think?
Well, you know, I think he's absolutely correct. And I really want to see not only Republicans, but Democrats that are reasonably thinking people, and of course, independents, take a serious look at what has happened just during the last 2 months, as I wrote about in my article. And if we don't curb this through the ballot box and vote Republican and, you know, maintain the Senate, get maybe a couple of more seats in the Senate, and certainly hold on to the Congress, we are in for serious troubles.
Yeah. You know, Ava, a lot of people feel this has been a major rallying call for both sides. In fact, I just was talking in the last piece here earlier in the show about the fact that we could have an incredible record turnout for a midterm election in this country, like ever, on both sides. Both sides seem to be ramped up on this. What do you think?
I hope you're right. I went to vote early at my little Mayberry RFD town that I live in, where there are like two people working in the office, and there was actually a line for people to get early ballots. I have never seen this before in my life. So I'm hoping that's an indication that the GOP is, you know, really, really serious about what we need to do.
Well, because
here,
a lot of people take their voting rights for granted, Ava. And a lot of people don't get off their duff and vote, right? And then they sit and bitch and complain about everything, which is not the answer, people. You got to get out and vote. And by the way, I got to ask you, before I ask Dr. Ron about Susan Collins and that unbelievable speech, I want to ask you, she is obviously a senator from Maine. What do you think about her?
I was very impressed with her speech. There was only one moment that I could say anything bad about it, and that was her glowing comments about Senator Feinstein. But other than that one comment, I thought her speech was historical in its context. She was giving us a lesson about what the Supreme Court is about, and it's a lesson that America really needs to listen to. This is not taught in school anymore. There are many young people standing out there protesting in front of the Capitol and in front of the Senate, and they don't understand what the Supreme Court is really supposed to do. There are two ways to look at this, what the Supreme Court's job is, okay? The left wants the Supreme Court to change law so that it will morph into a progressive lifestyle. And the right wants to preserve the Constitution and the Bill of Rights and the original. They're originalists, and that's what Kavanaugh is. He's an originalist.
Take a look at the vote in this particular instance, where we had a 48-50 vote yesterday to confirm Judge Kavanaugh. Okay, so look how important that is. The second thing is, look how scary that is, because we all understand, I mean, we should be educated enough to understand basic standards of proof, and we should be educated enough in our Fifth Amendment rights of due process and presumption of innocence, but apparently 48 people who are supposedly the guardians of our civil rights don't understand the first thing about it, or are willing to prostitute themselves for some leftist, you know, ideology. So that's pretty darn scary. But, you know, regardless, the only way that we guarantee our civil rights is to be vigilant and to get out and to vote, to understand the issues. And the only thing I want to say last to this is Ava's right again, and you are too. These schools do not educate our kids on the very basic foundations of our republic, our Constitution, our Bill of Rights, just exactly what the difference between the judiciary and the legislative branches are. People just don't seem to know it.
You know, and that's what's amazing about the Constitution, guys. I mean, think about the original framers. I mean, these people were, I mean, it's hard. I don't even know what adjectives you use, Ava, to describe them. I mean, brilliance comes to mind. But when you think about the core of America, you know, I love our, you know, I got to tell you, we don't have a lot of pomp and pageantry here. But I love what we do have in America. I mean, we're not royalty and that kind of a thing. But it's funny how when the Supreme Court elects the justice and he gets over, and immediately that evening he gets sworn in, and right away the president has to write a confirmation appointment in, and there's a bit of pomp and pageantry to what we do. I kind of like that, Ava.
Yes, it is. It's a beautiful ceremony, and you know, it has great meaning. And right now the court is 5-4. Okay. So, you know, we're still, you know, we still probably have another confirmation for Trump to make in the near future. You know, I'm looking at Ruth Bader Ginsburg, and she's elderly. She's been ill. I don't know. And she's also been very vocal about her animosity toward President Trump. So I don't know how long she will stay. I do think in the near future there will be another appointment for Trump to make.
You know, Mitch McConnell had a press conference last night after it all happened. He was talking to reporters and stuff, and one of the reporters asked him, well, so what happens if there's another justice? I mean, pretty well, I think he used that tone or close to it, right? Oh, yeah, yeah.
Was it a crying tone?
There's something like that, right? He said, well, what happens if there's an... And this reporter shouted this out, and McConnell looks with a straight face, and you know what? He looks at the reporter and he says, well, we'll be putting another conservative on there. And the reporter was like, So back to your point. I mean, that's what McConnell was saying. But that's the importance of elections. What we're talking about is voting, and that's the point of elections. But the thing is, with a lot of what the Supreme Court is doing these days, you know, I'm often baffled. And Ron, speak to this point a moment, but I am, when you see a lot of the decisions that come down from the Supreme Court, most of them, the majority of them, I find, typically are 5-4. And I'm often, and I really, this is a real struggle for me now, Ron. I mean, I'm, again, not to be a smart guy, again, I say that, but it's a struggle for me to understand if their role really truly is to interpret the Constitution and to keep the integrity of the Constitution for what it is to be, you know, that it is what it is. It's a real document. It's not a living, breathing thing that keeps changing as elections change, as some of them want it to do. If that's the case, how do we get so many 5-4 decisions? Why do 9 people look at this and interpret it? I mean, what they're doing is, I think they've politicized the Supreme Court, Ron, because they're politicizing it to their political ideology. Tell me I'm wrong, but...
Well, you know, let me say this. I have to be a student of the law to do what I do for a living, and especially when I'm dealing with constitutional issues, which is what I'm always dealing with, especially with, you know, the uses of force and officer-involved shootings. Those are all Fourth Amendment issues. And I love to go back into our major cases, our preeminent cases in Fourth Amendment, and I read the entire case, and I read all the decisions and the reasons for those decisions by those justices, and sometimes I am absolutely baffled. As a matter of fact, I was very proud of the fact that I got my very first Supreme Court decision as an expert being involved in a case that was recently decided. And I'm going back and I'm reading the documents that the justices looked at and their decisions. And I got to be honest with you, I was surprised it was even the same case because some of it wasn't even recognizable. And one of the reasons is because when we're dealing with cases involving defendants and plaintiffs, they are required to look at the represented facts that are most beneficial to the plaintiff instead of an even Steven type of review and determination. So there's a lot of things that are very complex, very challenging about the Supreme Court. You definitely have to be a brilliant jurist to understand those things. But I agree with you. I'm going to be, you know, somewhat I guess biased would be the word, and I'm going to tell you that from my look at it, I do see that some of the justice politicize what happens there, and that's why you get all this infighting that we're seeing now.
Yeah, it's interpretation. They interpret it how they want to interpret it, Ron, is what it is.
That's correct.
Yeah, and to me, there's something wrong with that, I'm always shaking my head with that. I don't really quite get it because, again, we're taught to Ava in basic civics class again that, you know, what the Supreme Court's role is and what the Constitution is. And then I've always scratched my head as a young man, for real, and I can never get my arms around why there are so many 5-4 decisions if we're really reading it as the Bible, you know, the Bible of our government. I don't get it. I truly don't.
You know, here's a quote from former Justice Thurgood Marshall. He was justifying his judicial activism. And this is his quote, "You do what you think is right and let the law catch up." And that
to me, that
summed up what I saw as judicial activism. And that's what the left is pushing for. That's what they want. That's why they're so disappointed.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that particular quote up because I probably believe a lot the way Judge Kavanaugh does. The Constitution is what it is, and you need to interpret within the guidelines that the Founding Fathers presented us with and not try to as Ava said, become some sort of judicial activist and try to create law and then say, well, things will catch up. That's not why they're there. They're there to interpret existing law.
How do you think we heal from this as a nation? Because again, I think one of the saddest things is that we're not embracing the true privilege and pleasure of being America and the gift that we all have as being Americans. And I mean, I don't ever want to lose sight of that, Ava. I try to remind people all the time, we really are blessed to live in this country and live where we are. I mean, truly, truly we are.
Oh, yes. And, you know, the freedom of speech and the freedom for people to, you know, join a group, like I joined the Tea Party when I was angry about Obama. You know, I mean, these things are all part of our rights, and it's fine to do these things. But I think when it gets to violence and it gets to this real, real low base hatred and vitriol and, you know, doxing of people online and you know, attacking people in restaurants and in their office place, I mean, you know, I think the American people have watched this now for about 2 years, and I think they're really getting tired of it. They're getting worn down and just walking away.
Well, you know, I have to tell you, as a behaviorist and also a career police officer, I'm going to disappoint you because I'm not idealistic about this. I'm not happy about this. As a matter of fact, I'm fairly depressed about it because, like I said in the article, I don't care what political persuasion you belong to, what you believe in. This is wrong. When people's civil rights have been corrupted, have been stolen from them, you know, you don't I've always said you don't lose your rights. People take them from you. And that is what's happening because the Democratic Party has prostituted themselves and gotten in bed with the radical left, with militant organizations, with socialists, with people like George Soros, who's the man behind the curtain, who is a twice convicted felon from Europe, both Hungary and from France. He's a currency manipulator, and he doesn't give a darn about civil rights or the Constitution in America. He wants to disrupt our nation so it disrupts the economy so he can benefit economically from that. And he doesn't care if he needs to use uneducated, stupid people and from the radical left as his soldiers and conspirators to make to achieve his goals and objectives of making a profit. He's going to do that, and those people and those politicians that are in his pocket are just too stupid to see it. And as long as we have what we are seeing now, I do not see these groups getting together. I do not see Republicans and Democrats reaching across the aisle and shaking hands. You must do everything you can legally and politically to vanquish the evil. And I'm going to call it what it is. To me, it's pure evil, because just like they did to Kavanaugh, so can they do to every single one of us. And none of us are safe.
What a great, great analysis from both of you. And again, remember to join us on Wednesday, Viewpoint, the Midweek Report, 6 p.m. with a 10 p.m. Encore. And we'd love to have you join us there as well. And tell your friends and family and folks about this news magazine and the work that we're doing here, friends. We're doing the heavy lifting, and we appreciate you being part of it. You can email us at talk@americaoutloud.com. And friends, we will always deliver an honest analysis and opinions on all sides of the political aisle. While we don't discriminate against an opinion, the main thing is we are always in search of the out loud truth.